Welcome to Habs Unfiltered. This independent podcast is featured on the Hockey Writers and iHeartRadio, bringing you honest and unfiltered entertainment and discussion on the Montreal Canadiens and hockey news. Your hosts, Matt Smith, Treg Wilson, and Blaine Putney, are proud to be one of your trusted sources. If you are talking about it, so are we. And welcome back to Habs Unfiltered. I'm your host, Blaine Putney, and I'm joined by my co-host, Treg Wilson.
Hello.
So, Treg and I were chatting prior to the show. We covered off a bunch of stuff. We called each other names early just to get it out of the way. So we're just going to dive into this episode. We've got a lot of stuff about the Habs-Leafs game, the deadline, and some rule changes that we would like to see. So why don't we just get started here in the first half and just go into the deadline grades. So Montreal had a pretty quiet deadline overall, considering Jake Allen is now in New Jersey. The Canadiens traded Jan Mischak. So the tuck my sack line will never happen.
Not in Montreal anyway.
Not in Montreal. So why don't we just get into that? What grade would you give the deadline?
I would say a B minus. The only reason I say a B minus is that I personally didn't like the retention on Allen. I understood it was needed to get the third conditional second pick, or else you're getting a fifth, sixth round pick for Allen, and which was the rumor that Toronto offered months ago. I was hoping maybe they could get Pearson or Amia traded or something like that. And I think I would have rathered the retention on Amia. But in retrospect, I guess it didn't really matter. It's a 3.5 or a 3.8. So, you know, you get the better draft pick for Allen for getting rid of it. And if it turns into a second, it's kind of a steal with the way Allen was playing. Of course, for that, he has to play 40 games and New Jersey has to make the playoffs in order for the third to become a second. So I don't know, unless they go. So unless they, and then they went and got Kaken in there from San Jose. So it looks like they're going with a 1A, 1B next year.
And I know a lot of people were talking about, well, if New Jersey's not making the playoffs, why would they make all these moves now? And, you know, get rid of Toffoli, bring in Allen, change their entire goaltending structure. And for me, it makes sense. They're still trying to, at the very least, push the younger guys to try and get in there. Whether they make it or not is irrelevant. It's the effort to get there. Toffoli wasn't going to give him anything. He was going to be a free agent anyway. May as well just move on and get what you can get. But with the two goaltenders that they brought in, this gives them time to acclimatize to the Devils' system, and they're going to be ready for next year.
See, I'm the opposite. I agreed with Mike Johnson there the other at the trade center. I didn't understand New Jersey's looking into Jake Allen, especially in the off season when they have a chance to get Jacob Markstrom or Linus Allmark or someone like that. It could be money, but I mean, their cap situation isn't terrible.
They do want to sign a couple of guys, maybe add to the team.
They do, but if they want to be a playoff team, to me, Jake Allen and Kekkonen don't scream goaltenders that make you a playoff team, right? So that's just the and if they get Markstrom with the forward line they have, the defense they probably will be a playoff team next year. I'm not going to complain. I mean, Montreal got rid of their three goalie system. They got at least a third round draft pick for Jake Allen, which I like. If they don't get Markstrom on that, I can see Allen getting his 40 games next year if he's playing a two-man thing with Kekkonen, which I think is perfect for Allen. I think Allen's a better goalie when he's – and I think he alluded to that in some interviews afterwards, saying the three-goalie system is really hard. It's hard to get into a rhythm. And he had a hard time getting a rhythm, and he applauded Primo and Montembeau for how they stuck with it and how they worked with it and how they kept their – up with their game and stuff like that. True professional with Jake Allen, with how everything went out. Hugh said this simply because of age is why Allen became the odd man out on the thing. They didn't want to lose Primo for nothing. And yeah, so the Allen thing was a bit of a surprise because I was leaning
Yeah.
more to thinking Savard was the guy that was going to go. And simply just because Hugh said they're okay with going into the summer with a three-goalie system. It got down to 30 minutes left in the deadline. It didn't look like there was any. I mean, I heard rumblings that Colorado was kicking the tires at Allen and what was the other team? Colorado, it wasn't New Jersey. Colorado and
I forget which one.
I
LA. I
forget.
think it was LA.
As LA, you're right. It was LA kicked the tires at Allen to see about getting them over there. What the talks went for that, I don't know. And then New Jersey kind of just swooped in there. I heard New Jersey kind of a little New Jersey, but that was all
In the
season. So
background. Yeah.
I just put that up with, well, New Jersey's been looking for a goalie all season, so of course their name's going to get thrown in there. And then he eventually went. So I thought that was good. Sean Monahan alone gives you a top value for the trade. Like if you just traded
Yeah.
Sean Monahan, I think you're still at a B to a B plus because you just got two firsts for one player, and how that's just genius. That's just genius management. And when he did it, I don't think he would have got the value for Sean Monahan the closer to deadline, looking at what other players got. Looking at what other teams, it was a buyer's market this year, which was odd because the last few years it has been a seller's market.
And what I don't
But
understand is people were telling him, hold on, hold on, hold on, maybe you'll get more. But he set a price that he wanted. Somebody met it. Why are you going to hold on?
well, that's just it. Like we all speculated maybe a first at a prospect, but the first made more sense. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of red flags when it comes to Sean Monahan with his health, with, I mean, he's been on fire since he got to Winnipeg. So maybe it was a steal for Winnipeg. I don't know. But if you
Everyone's
look at
happy.
what Toffoli got and what some of these others guys got, and you're like, wow, that's all you like. We're talking fourth, fifth round draft picks. We're not talking second, third, even the Hurdle trade to
Oh,
Vegas.
yeah,
I
that
mean,
was nuts.
there's a first in that, but you're kind of like retention for 6 years at 17%. Like the 17% is okay, but you've just lost your one of your retention slots for 6 years for a
Yeah.
guy who's on who for a guy who Vegas is going to put on LTIR until, well, they don't even have to
Playoffs.
now. They just put him on IR now until the playoffs. So I don't know. It's just that Hurdle trade was a confusing trade to me. But just judging from what other guys were going for,
Yeah.
a month before the trade deadline, getting rid of Monahan was just pure genius. And then I thought they upgraded Laval with trading Meshack for Perreault.
Yeah, I
I think
kind of like that move. I do
I
like
like it
that
as well.
move. Now, I know that everyone's kind of poo-pooing that move. Oh no, yeah. Well, a lot of people are. They're saying it was a pointless move, but what Hughes did was he added a little bit of scoring to Laval, and then he used up a prospect that really didn't have much of a future with the Canadiens based on the where they are in the depth chart. And he brought in somebody with a skill set that they lack. There's not a lot of them. So Perreault, he's a shooter. He's an offensive player. If he makes it to the NHL, he'll be like a middle six scoring threat if he makes it. So it's a boom or bust type of thing. But it's a gamble that's worth taking when you have 30 fucking prospects that are all basically the same player.
It was a low risk, high reward type move where we're taking this second rounder that we thought would turn out to be a great bottom six player for us or mid six player for us. And he wasn't really, I mean, he was getting kind of hot at the time of the trade, but if you really think about it, he was just a middle six guy in Laval. And so if you're a middle six guy in Laval, that's not, especially when you have guys like Owen Beck, Joshua Waugh, all these Russell or Farrell, not Russell, Farrell, all these other the way starts with a K, Kidney's playing, the way Kidney's been playing lately. All these guys are past him in the depth chart. Then you got Philip Massar coming, you got, whoever you're going to draft this year. So you're looking at it and you're like, you took Perreault, a guy who is a top six guy in the AHL. You already know this from the way he was playing already. And you basically upgraded Laval, and now you put a guy that has NHL potential into your depth. So you basically moved Meshach up higher the depth charge by replacing him with another player. That's basically all you did.
Yeah, you
And
gave him a shorter path to the NHL in Anaheim, which is fine, but you're bringing in a type of a player that you don't have a lot of. So, boom or bust type player, yes, of course. But why not? He loves taking these chances on reclamation projects that used to be from the first round. Eventually, one's going to hit. Now he's giving away assets that to get these players that don't really impact his plan whatsoever. If anything, it's just he's buying 50-50 tickets.
Meshach's not going to come back and haunt the Habs in
No.
2 to 3 years' time. Now, another thing it does, it Joshua Waugh is pretty much a permanent NHLer until Montreal is eliminated. They did the paper move to put him and Struble back down to Laval, so they will be able to play the playoffs if Laval makes the playoffs. But Perreault replaces Waugh on Laval.
Kind of, yes.
Kind of.
Yeah.
He's a different type of player, but you understand he
Yeah.
replaces that off he replaces that offense that Laval's missing from Joshua Waugh. I don't think he's as personally, I don't think he's as good as Joshua Waugh. He probably has a higher ceiling due to the fact he was a first overall pick and Waugh was a seventh or first not first overall, first round pick, while Waugh was a seventh, fifth round pick. Fifth round pick. So that in itself, you'd say, all right, well, Perreault should do well. But he kind of replaces that offense. He gets a guy into the top six that provides more offense than, say, bringing Meshach or Kidney or Legere up into the top six that just isn't going to have that pop.
And he looked okay. I mean, he wasn't quite comfortable yet playing with Laval. He was on a line with Farrell. There was a little bit of chemistry there. They made a couple of decent plays. Perreault did take a couple of bad penalties, but I mean, he was all amped up to play in his hometown, after a long trip, and it's going to take him a little bit to get his feet under him. He's finally healthy, and he is no longer playing on the worst team in the AHL. So he's going to look a little bit better than he did prior to this.
I
But
mean,
hey.
this to me is why I give it a B minus.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a an A. They didn't win the draft, but they fixed issues they needed to fix. They fixed a three goalie system. They got the second first round pick that they wanted to go into, and they have 4 first round picks in the next 2 seasons. They have 23 picks for the next two seasons with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 in the first two rounds of the next two over the next 2 seasons so
Seven or
far.
nine, something like that. Or
It's
if you add the 3 rounds, the top 90, I think they got like nine.
yeah, well, there's 1 second round pick this year, 2 firsts, 2 thirds. Next year it's 2, 2, and 2, I think. 2, 4, 6, 7, 8,
Let's
9, 10. That's,
take a peek.
yeah, I
Yeah,
don't
this year it's 2/3. Next year's 3/3. Oh, the it's a conditional pick. The New Jersey conditional pick is next year, so it could be a second. I mean, that's you're looking at 1, 2, 3, 5, 6, 7, 12 top 90 picks over the next 2 years.
So that's pretty good. Now, I imagine some of those picks are not going to be there after this
No.
draft. Not
I
because they're
mean,
picking them, but I think they're going to move some picks.
yeah.
And I think.
Hughes did say he was going to be buying this summer. He didn't really come out and say, we're going to get these guys, but he hinted pretty heavily.
He said he wants to be a buyer rather than a seller sooner than later. To me, that tells me this year's a setup year. Get his ducks in a row. A lot of money's coming off the books at the end of this year. They have 20 million in cap space next year. Going into next year, they're going to have something like 40 some odd million going into
49.
the following year. Mind you, there's going to be some UFAs and RFAs are going to need to sign, but regard I mean, Jack Eye's the only guy this year that, I mean, we're getting into draft now, but Jack Eye's the only guy that they really need to re-sign in the offseason. Yolonen, I think, is hit or miss. They may sign him, they may not. They're probably going to try to move him in the offseason.
He might be part of a package deal, I think.
And even if they do sign Yolonen, he's not going to be much more than what he's making now, 1.8 million or whatever it is now. Jack Eye's probably going to get a couple million-dollar contract. So really they're still around 17, $18 million once it's all said and done. And like we both said, Hughes is saying, I give this rebuild one more year before they're looking at playoffs. And by rebuild, I mean they're going to be challenging for a playoff spot, but not quite being there.
They'll be a lot better next year for sure. They'll have a few more pieces added. And the way the cap is going, he's setting himself up to have enough money to sign a max contract with somebody. And Draisaitl is supposedly available that time.
Connor McDavid and Sidney Crosby are going to be Montreal Canadiens and win the cup for the
They're
Habs.
gonna sign for 1 million each every for 1 year at a time.
That's right. And just because they know where the cup needs to belong.
That's right.
Yeah, Draisaitl's available, and I'm not saying they're going to get Draisaitl, but I mean, you're going to hear the rumors of every UFA going to Montreal. I mean, let's be honest. If you don't even inquire about a guy like Draisaitl, you're not doing your job as a GM.
Exactly.
So.
This is a guy who's one of the top centers in the NHL. He's still young enough. He's definitely worth the money if you get him signed. And that would be a major piece if you're going to be a contender.
He could have already been a Canadian if the Edmonton Oilers would have took PK Subban, but whatever.
That would have been fucking hilarious.
Whatever.
Well, plus the first, I think it was.
Yeah.
Whatever. So I kind of agree with your grade for the deadline. Personally, I give maybe an extra point or two just because Hughes stuck to his guns. He set a price.
Yes.
He didn't, if it wasn't met, he didn't move. He didn't have to. So I'll give him a bonus point for that. So moving on from that, we were talking a little bit before the show about should the cap be extended into the playoffs? And you had a you had read something that's really interesting about LTIR.
So I read on Twitter, and I forget who did it. So if you listen to us, I'm giving you, message us or whatever, saying, hey, I'm the guy that wrote that tweet. Screenshot your tweet just so you're not some jackass trying to claim it. But basically what this person said was, and it might not even been a Habs guy, I don't know. Basically what this person said was, so I'm not against Vegas for doing what they're doing. They're not they're everything they're doing is within the rules of the CBA. It's not a loophole because everybody knows about it. The NHL knows about it and the Players Association knows about it, and it's just something you can do. So I get people being mad about it. I get people, but I mean, your team can do it too. I'm just saying. Don't fault Vegas because they're like, you know what? Now, if it comes out that Stone and Eichel aren't really injured, you know what I mean? And then blah, 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 then you could look at a conspiracy with the NHL in Vegas to make sure that they keep winning cups. But
Vegas can make t-shirts about 21 million over the cap.
yeah, or whatever. But what this guy said was, if you are not on the roster by the last, like a healthy player by the last, well, basically what they said, if you don't play the last game of the season, you can't play the first round of the playoffs. I would change that. I wouldn't say they have to play the last game. And the only reason I say that is there's a lot of teams that sit their top players on the last game or the last two games of the season when they've already clinched a playoff spot, because I'm not getting anyone hurt to go into
But you
the,
don't want
I'm
to
not
hurt your best
risking,
player.
I'm not going to risk an injury going, unless this guy's chasing some kind of milestone, they're not going to play them. So what I would say is you have to be at least not on the IR and a healthy scratch on the last game of the season in order to play. Now, that can be also, oh, well, last game of the season, we'll just take him off. However, if he's on LTIR, you just can't take him off LTIR and say he's on my team now before the last game of the season, because you have to fit him under the cap. So that to me, I think would be a better thing, because then that way you're looking at it as, well, if this guy's really injured, he's really on LTIR. If he can't play by the la if he can't get in by the last game of the season, A, that team's going to have to sit him out for the first round of the playoffs, or B, that team's going to really have be careful of how they move at the trade deadline and how much money they spend, because they're like, well, I'm just using Vegas for example, because they're the ones that are, if Mark
They're doing it.
Stone's going to be healthy for the first round of the playoffs, we have to have him healthy for the last game. So we got to make better make sure his, I don't know what he makes, 9 million or 10 million or whatever it is he makes.
Now, whatever ridiculous number.
If we got to make sure we're still under the cap by that much in order to fit him on the roster, or we're playing the last two games with 10 players. So
Yeah, he may as well just not play. But they got
forfeit the two games, but
hurt. In who's hurt right now? They got Wilson and not Wilson, Mantha. They added in. There's a lot of money that popped into that. Hanifin. That's a shitload of money that just showed up. Although Hanifin's not making a lot, but I mean, you got 5.7 for Mantha, and then you got another, what is it, eight and a half? Or now it's with the 17%, it's what, six, almost seven?
Yeah, for hurdle. But
Yeah.
what do they have on LTIR right now?
Well, let's take a peek here. I'm gonna bring them up. They've got Hurdle, Alec Martinez, and Brett Howden on the IR, so that still counts.
Yeah.
Long term. Stone, Carrier, and Leonard for 15.9 million LTIR.
So there you go. So they can get up over 100, almost pretty much 100 million per season right now on their season to go into the playoffs. I mean, and again, I'm not going to bitch about it because there's nothing illegal about it. They're not circumventing the cap. They're not I mean, unless you can prove that they're faking injuries that the NHL doctors seem to be going with, then really there's nothing you can
Well, it's not really helping the conspiracy theorists to shut up when Mark Stone is hurt going into the playoffs. This is the third year in a row.
I'm just saying. I get it. I get it. Look at Toronto. With the same thing said about Toronto every year. Toronto
Robidas
signed
Island.
three. Toronto signed three high-profile, expensive players this season, and all three ended up on LTIR after they had shitty starts to their season. So there's a conspiracy there. Now, do I believe that those players can play? I don't. I believe when they go on LTIR, they go through certain check. There's certain check boxes they have to meet. There's certain things they have to do. Unless the NHL is picking teams that they want to help out, which is a bigger conspiracy, right? That, you know, is going to get out somewhere somehow. Then
Well,
I'm sorry, I just can't, you know.
no, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the only player that has been investigated by the NHL for an injury was Shea Weber.
That is correct.
Now, there might be others, but obviously that one there kind of sticks out. You know, of all people to think a team is trying to force into pretending to be hurt, Shea Weber. You know, the guy, he's
and
not that kind
that's and that's when Montreal's in the basement of the league. So who
of.
cares?
But they still looked into it. But you don't hear about them looking into anybody else, which I find a little odd.
Well, look at Carey Price. They didn't look into Carey Price, and there could be an
Yeah.
argument that was he really hurt? He was, but I truly believe if a player's on IR, LTIR, and maybe call me, I don't know, maybe call me naive, but I mean, I think there's just too many barriers you get across to not have something wrong. I mean,
Yeah.
I don't know. What's Stone got, a ruptured spleen or something like that?
Lacerated spleen.
Forsberg had that back in the day, and he was off for a long while with a lacerated spleen. So it's not uncommon. I mean, I could see if he had, like, I don't know, influx gallbladder or something that they, the Darius Kasparaitis of the left knee, then maybe you look into that. That
Maybe.
sounds made up. That sounds made up. So, I like what this guy proposed. I think it's a good way
Yeah.
to sit there and say, okay, we're going to let you, if your guy's really injured and you want to gain this money or use this cap relief to bring in more talent to help you in the playoffs, then you get one of two choices. That guy doesn't play the first round of the playoffs, right? Which for any team, if they feel they're strong enough, okay, we can do that. We should be able to get through the first round, right? Or you're going to have to make sure you have whatever millions of dollars that guy is on the cap, and make sure by the last game of the season you have enough money to fit him into your roster. Or guess what? He ain't playing to the second round.
Well, there you go. I like that idea. I do. I really like that because it's not imposing a monetary limitation on a team
No.
in a way, not directly, but it is kind of it does limit them in their ability to be underhanded with it. Like the, I know you didn't call it a loophole, but it kind of is because it's not the intended method for the
It's
rules.
not, but
It's there.
it's there, and everyone knows it. It's not like it's, oh, we found this loophole that they didn't clue into. They knew it was there. They were
It's
just like,
like the
well, do you
loophole I
want
found where you don't pay taxes ever. If you never put your taxes in, they don't know you exist and you never pay your taxes. I mean, so I've heard.
So, okay, Wesley Snipes. But if we're going to talk about rule changes, I want to kind of move into this to other areas as well. The PWHL has a couple of rule changes I would like to see in the
Yes.
NHL. The shorthanded goal on a power play, a shorthanded goal on a power play ends the power play. I think that's a brilliant idea, right? It's going to open the game up a bit more, especially on the power play, because you're going to want to have your, teams are going to try to put that scoring guy on the penalty kill.
Guilty kill.
And another thing I like what they do, or not what they do, but what NBA does, is I like the 7, 8, 9 teams playing that little round robin to get the last two playoff spots.
I'm not a fan of that one, but I do like the PWHL rule that they brought in for the golden pick. So after a certain point when the play, once you're eliminated, the team with the most points after they're eliminated wins the first pick instead of just being the most useless team.
Personally, I would like to see the teams that don't make the playoffs have their own little tourney
Like a
during the
relegation
playoffs,
round kind of deal.
have a relegation round where the not the bottom team, but the top four teams have a round robin type thing to find out who gets the first overall pick. Because I agree, you shouldn't be which you shouldn't be rewarding a team for sucking.
Yeah, and also you're hurting the entertainment value of your product by having this in place. It de-incentivizes teams from trading away good assets to be worse, like Chicago. I mean, they're fucking horrible. And you look at the PWHL, like it's only a 16 league, so this it'll work really, really well for them, where four teams make the playoffs, The bottom two can play their game, and the winner gets the first pick. I mean, I think that works extremely well.
The issue with the NHL is you have 16 teams that don't make the playoffs. So if
Yeah.
you wanted to have a tournament to see who's going to win the first overall draft pick, the issue with that is you basically have two playoffs going on at the same time. You have the 16 team NHL Stanley Cup playoffs and the 16 team Celebrini playoffs or whatever the hell you're
Yeah,
doing.
the bottom four teams will play a round robin. Whatever, that's the lottery there.
Please see, that's what you got to do. Do you want the top four teams that just missed the playoffs to do it, or do you want the bottom four teams that see? So you got to look at it. Well, so how are we going to do this? The winner gets the first overall pick, then the others just fall into place as they finish in the season. That's the way I, or as they finish in this little tournament or whatever, then they do that. So I
There's a lot
think,
of ways they can go.
and that they can make money off it. I mean, there you have
Yeah.
teams who wouldn't be making any money during the playoffs. But now you got fans coming to games to see them play because they want them to win so they can get that lower draft pick.
You know what? They could do it during the third round of the playoffs when there's just those two series, or they can do it
Could
during the
be.
Stanley Cup final so that when the final's playing, no other games are on. But when
Do you know what it
they're
is?
they play in the off days.
Three on three hockey. The entire time.
Oh yeah, that'd be cool. It's a
Pond hockey.
gimmick,
You
but it'd be cool.
play outdoors, three on three. You know, everyone, all the teams are there. It's just, you know, 2 10-minute periods.
Yeah, that could work.
That's the way the NHL's going with their gimmicks now anyway, so why not just let them have it?
Speaking of which,
I don't know.
Minnesota and Nashville played as we record today. It's the 10th of March. They went to overtime, and Minnesota pulled their goalie to have a 4-on-3 in overtime and won. So, you needed a win. You pull your goalie in overtime. Now you have a power play in overtime. Awesome. But I think that'll backfire quite often.
Yeah,
It's too much open
it'll
space.
unless you're a good possession
Yeah.
team, it's going to backfire. Back to the playoff thing, but someone brought up in the media, I forget who it was now, that they think the playoffs should be expanded to 24 teams instead of 16. They said the same amount of
Don't
teams
know.
are making the playoffs when we had 21 teams as there are now that we have 32. Personally, if they do it like they did in the first COVID year, where it's kind of a play in to see if you make it, which brings
Like
me
the
back to
NBA.
the NBA, okay, I'm okay with that. But I'm kind of okay with 16 teams making the playoffs. I'm perfectly
That's
okay with
fine.
that. I mean, if you look at baseball and football, less than that make the playoffs for leagues with 30 teams in them. So, like, we don't need all but eight teams not making the playoffs.
True. And I know that I think the reason why they want more teams making it, parity in the NHL is a real thing. And everyone loves a Cinderella run.
Yeah.
So you'd see a lot of upsets, maybe, or more than you would see now. But I'm fine with the 16. And the play-in, like you mentioned, that might work. But it's still 16 teams in the NHL playoffs.
Correct. So if we go back to COVID, the play-in series was not technically the players' production counted as playoff points, but the series itself was not a playoff series. It was a play-in to play in the playoffs. Toronto
So
fans, you
you're
did not make the
saying,
playoffs
I was about to ask that. You're saying Columbus knocked Toronto out of the regular season.
Correct. And Montreal was that Cinderella team for that round. Because no one expected them to beat Pittsburgh, and they ended up almost beat Philly to go to the second round too. So that's when Suzuki ruined Carter Hart's career. Oh wait, no, that was Carter Hart.
Okay, well, we'll end this part of the show here. We'll go into some commercials. When we come back, we'll talk about how the Canadians fell to an extremely undermanned Stanley Cup contender who should never win games, but they always win games. I don't know. That's weird. It's Toronto media. They overhype under. It's weird. Anyway, we'll do some commercials and we'll come right back. Hey, welcome back to episode 398. We're just back from the commercial break. What a great set of commercials that are absolutely amazing, and I have no idea what they were.
I missed the Mark Bergman protein commercials. They were the best.
Yeah, those were good. We got to come up with some new ones.
The Charlie Lindgren jockstrap.
Yeah, we'll have to find some new stuff. But in the meantime, enjoy those geolocated Spotify ads. So we covered a couple of items in the first half. In this half, we're going to talk about the Montreal versus Toronto game on Saturday night, where the woefully undermanned Toronto Maple Leafs heroically entered the Bell Centre and eked out a win against the evil and overpowering Montreal Canadiens. I think I hit all the Toronto Sun media talking points on that one.
Now, to be fair, the Toronto fans don't feel like Toronto gets a more, what's the word I'm looking for?
Enough
fair.
Coverage.
No, they don't think they get fair coverage. They think they're treated poorly by the media. And the only reason we see a whole lot of Toronto stuff is because they are centralized in the most popular team in Canada. No one cares about Vancouver or Edmonton or Montreal except Quebec.
I'm sure it has nothing to do with the fact that the ownership of the media companies is the same as the Leafs.
And we have RDS. Toronto doesn't have their own, except the
Leafs
fact
TV.
RDS is basically just Quebec. And unless you live outside of Quebec, you want to pay to get the channel. So,
yeah.
You know, just
yeah.
Let's forget that fact on the whole thing. But
yeah, thoughts and prayers to Leaf fans.
Yeah.
So anyway, the Canadians welcomed the Maple Leafs without Mitch Marner, and Toronto eked out a 3-2 win against a lottery team. Let's be brutally honest, Montreal, as well as they played the last week or two, well, minus a couple of games here and there. The efforts there, you can see the work ethic. They're in games, but they're still a lottery team. Toronto is supposed to be a Stanley Cup contending team. Yet somehow they barely beat Montreal. So I'm not saying that just because it's a 3-2 win. I'm saying that because Montreal won the possession stats in every category. High danger chances, scoring chances for XGF percentage, so the expected goals for percentage, Corsi, Fenwick. I mean, it all leans Montreal.
Yeah, and I had mentioned on my thing on Twitter, just kind of stirring a pot here, it said, did Matthews even play tonight? And really, if I look at
Who
it,
knows?
though, he was quiet. He was invisible, and which is and you know, I'm not trying to shit on Matthews. That's unusual for Matthews, especially this year, because if he's not scoring, he's at least almost scoring. There's been very few games this season where you can say Matthews' name was barely mentioned, especially if Chris Cuthbert's calling the game. So,
Ryan Suzuki.
It's just like, Suzuki dominated Matthews in that game. He dominated him.
Yes.
And
he did.
I get it. Someone mentioned to me, oh, well, Matthews has 26 goals in 30 some odd games, so Suzuki gets lucky every once in a while. Well, first of all, Matthews has been playing for 3 years longer than Suzuki. Suzuki's only been on the top line for the past 2.5 years. So, no, Matthews did not score all his 26. I couldn't tell you what the stats are between Suzuki and Matthews and how well they played. I know Matthews got a hat
Matthews,
trick. A hat trick the first game of the season with Suzuki on that top line. So, however, this particular game, And I want to get into more about how Suzuki and is better than what people are giving him credit for on all aspects of his game, is the fact that he, that entire line, and really you could say that entire line, especially since Slavkovsky got there, and that entire line has just improved in all aspects of the game. And with that improving, though, I do see Caulfield's goal total coming down because he's more engaged in other parts of the game, like playmaking, back checking, defensive play.
More complete player.
And this takes me back to when Ken Hughes said Patrice Bergeron is the type of player that didn't need to score 100 points because he made everyone else better.
He impacted the game in many ways, not
Right.
just on the score
Right.
sheet.
So Nick Suzuki is impacting the game in every other way and not just on the score sheet. Now, whether or not there could be an argument made that Nick Suzuki is making that top line better or Slafkovský is making that top line better, because it's just coincidental that top line has really stepped it up a notch since Slafkovský got there.
I just think their skill sets mesh together well. They complement each other
It's a
well.
perfect line combo. You have the goal scorer who, yes, is not scoring the goals. Then you have the defensive center playmaker. And then you have the power forward, playmaking power forward, because he's not a goal scoring power forward, who goes to the front of the net, wins the play, hard plays, hard, gets the puck loose on the boards, yada, yada, yada. So here's a theory I'm going to throw out there about why Caulfield's down. It's not so much that Caulfield can't find his scoring, it's so much that they spread out the goals on that line, and that Caulfield's the guy that's getting covered. Slafkovský got guys on him on the boards trying to get the puck out. Guess who everyone's kind of not really covering? And that's Suzuki, and that's why Suzuki's getting the puck open and getting the shots into the net.
And that's where it is right now. But maybe the next game it'll be the coverage will be on Suzuki and that opens up one of the others. I think that's part
Correct.
of why they're doing that well.
Because you can go complain all you want about Caulfield not scoring. He's on pace for over 65 points, I think. So I'm okay with that. I'm okay with my 30 goal scorer scoring only 20 if he's getting 10 more points than what I would have gotten if he was a 30 goal scorer. Right? Because
That's right. It
really, Caulfield looked to me like a Richey type player. High goals, low assists, medium range points. And he's actually going to be fairly high points. And actually, this year it's going to be low goals, high assists, high points. So I don't know what to say about that.
yeah. Now, this kind of points to all the poo-pooing about Suzuki being not a top line center. I think that he is proving that he is this year. There's been long stretches over the last couple of years where he's been on a line with AHLers and he was still producing. Now he's a much closer to a point per game player. He's able to shut down big name centers like Matthews and others and still produce. So yeah, he's not scoring 100 points a year, but he'll score 70 to 85 in that range and outscore the other centers that he's up against. So, mean, I don't know what more you would want. You've got a net positive in your top line.
Well, I mean, we're going to have our first 80-point scorer, or close to 80-point
Since
scorer,
Kovalev.
75 plus since Kovalev. 61 points in 64 games. What's that? 76 points. So,
Like that.
yeah, you're looking at 78 points. So, he gets 2 or 3 points his next game. You're looking at 80 points. So, and you're absolutely right. He's been doing that with the AHL players. He did that with half a line for most of the season. And now that Slafkovský's there, he's really putting the puck in the net. He's putting them, not just putting the puck in the net, but he's making plays. His whole overall game has been absolutely on fire and it's been consistent. And I think that's the main thing you got to think about is the consistency. It'd be
Right.
different now. It'd be different now if he was, not as consistent, right? So, I mean, and Kai just did a Caulfield's 65 points. So, when was the last time we had almost 270 point scorers on the team? Like,
Be a long time. I think 09. I think
I'm
it was
not
an
even
09.
sure. I'm not even
Was it?
sure we had 260 point scorers in the last while. Maybe back when the Pacioretty days.
Yeah, Pacioretty and Cole.
Or Pacioretty, Plekanec. Did Pacioretty have 60 points when Plekanec had a 70?
I'm not sure, but I know that Eric Cole did, the two of them
Eric Cole did,
on the
yeah.
Desharnais line. I think he was also there. But
So.
yeah, it's been a while. So you got yourself, you finally have yourself a first line. The Canadians now need to fill a second line. You got Newhook, Doc when he's healthy, maybe Roy, maybe whoever they pick in the top 10, who knows? So they're slowly getting the pieces they need in this rebuild. And we talked about the salary cap in the first half. So they're well set up to fill their requirements. But in this game, Slafkovský showed why he was picked where he was picked in his draft class. That first goal in the first minute doesn't happen without him making that controlled zone entry and then that bullet cross ice pass right on the tape for Caulfield. And he took the hit to make the play.
Well, that's just the progression of Slafkovský's game. Now, when I see Team Tank, who was team send Slafkovský to the playoffs, and now every single one of them is saying, whoa, we got what we, Slafkovský was the right pick. That's when you know something's going right, because we all know Team Tank and those guys. And I'm not going to shit on them either. They have their reasons for why they want the team. And I get it, Team Tank. We want the best pick in the draft because we need an elite player. They're not wrong. They're not wrong in this assessment. What the wrong is the draft isn't the only place you can get an elite player. And sometimes, even when you do draft high, you don't get the elite player you think you get. It's all just a projection. But again, they're not wrong. So when they sit there and go from 1 year of Slafkovský needs to be in Laval, but he shouldn't be up there. They're ruining his development. This is going to be just like the Kotkaniemi situation. And rightfully so. A lot of people have PTSD for the Marc Bergevin development drafting decade, but this is a whole new management. It's a whole new team with an actual development place in there. And then it comes out Martin St. Louis was like, I told them not, I didn't want them. They were going to send him to Laval. And I said, no, I want to work with this guy. And right then and there, this shows you that St. Louis is an NHL coach. And the reason, even it, I get it. He only ever coached Pee Wee. Oh, the team. I mean, then you have the
He's a
team.
Hall of Fame player.
And then you have the fans who are like, we should be winning a Stanley Cup every year. This team's shit. This rebuild is just an excuse. Yada, 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 yada. They're the old school that were around when the Montreal won a cup on average once every 5 years. Well, basically, right up to 1993, they did on average win a cup once every 5 years. So,
It's
24
true.
cups in 100 years, you're looking at, once every 6 years, they averaged a cup.
Which is why a lot of people, when you put something on Facebook, will come back, oh, the rebuild's been 30 years. I'm tired of the rebuild. No, that's not how it works, dumbass.
Yeah. So they
That's
didn't
not.
rebuild. They didn't rebuild. That was the problem.
No.
What we're going through right now is an actual rebuild. What we did before was a band-aid fix. Oh no, we're gonna have a couple lean years. We'll draft this guy, this guy. Okay, now we're gonna get that free agent, that free agent, that free agent, that free agent, throw all this money at him, and hopefully
Limp
we have
into
a
the
team
playoffs.
together and we're gonna limp into the playoffs or we're gonna win the division. But we're still not good enough to get through the playoffs. except that one year, and then Kreider took our best player route. And then,
Yeah.
you know, and I mean, you always had a player that they built around that kept that team at a certain point. You had the Jose Theodores, you had the Carey Prices, you had the Patrick, well, I guess you didn't have had Patrick Wall after we stopped winning the Cups, but you know what I mean? You had that, and that's why they didn't do a proper rebuild. They did tear it all down
No.
and say, we got to start from scratch. They're
And
still kind of
they look
having
at,
because they
yeah.
haven't really been able to, but
But you're not getting all those top 10 picks. So, you know, like Buffalo, who had 10 straight top 10 picks and are clearly Stanley Cup champions every other year. Oh, wait, they haven't made the playoffs in almost 15 years. Or the Leafs, who've had multiple top 10 picks and did a full rebuild, brought in some superstars like Marner and Matthews, for instance, and yet still can't win in the playoffs. There's more to it than just star power. You have to build a team culture. You have to add some depth. You have to use your cap properly, right? Tavares. And we're seeing some of that from the Canadians now. Now, back in the with the Leafs game, Toronto made a few moves at the deadline and brought in some guys, namely Edmondson. You remember 2021 when Edmondson was enemy number one in Toronto?
All he did
And
was
why?
cross check. All he did was cross check you in front of the net.
Yeah.
He can't play defense. He just tries to beat you with his stick. This guy's
He
terrible.
should be suspended forever.
It should be suspended. All he does is want to hurt players and blah, blah, blah. He's a shit defender. Let's go to Twitter 2024. Let's see here.
He's a hero.
Edmondson is the type of defenseman we need. Edmondson is the big tough guy that we need on the blue line to be a perfect matchup for player A, B, or C. Edmondson, you know, it's, you know, all right. So 3 years ago,
Total 180.
his style of play was terrible hockey, and it shouldn't be allowed because it's, you know, against the rule. All he does is cross-check people in the front of the net, yada yada. Now he's the exact person you need to get you through the playoffs.
Now that he's in Toronto.
Make up your mind. Now,
So,
granted,
yeah.
I agree. He is the defenseman Toronto needs to help them get through the playoffs. They're absolutely right. But don't
He's
sit there and.
their new Jake Muzzin.
Yeah. The problem is they need one or two more Jake Muzzins.
Yeah. And they can't afford an injury. Like right now, Marner's out. He didn't show up to the game in Montreal because he's out injured. And you see how Matthews plays without Marner. He doesn't. He just doesn't work without him.
Which is odd because they did a graph last night during the game and Toronto something like 11-2-2 this season or without Marner or in the last 2 seasons without Marner, which again I'm just saying I find that odd because you're absolutely right. When Marner doesn't play, Matthews isn't the same player. And it's just they have that good chemistry. They have that chemistry you want to make up a good line. Why it doesn't work in the playoffs, I don't know. Marner Last year, Marner had a pretty good playoffs, but Marner seems to shut down in the playoffs. He's not a play. It's like Pierre Turgeon. Pierre Turgeon, great regular season player, could never really do well in the playoffs. And some players are just like that. Personally,
Because
to
he's
me, that
getting
play.
bullied. He was getting
Personally, to
bullied
me,
in the playoffs. That's why.
Edmondson was cross-checking him too much, and he
Yes.
shouldn't have been able to play. But now that Edmondson's on his team, that's okay. I really enjoy when they do
Not
that.
just him. Ryan Reeves, who's going to put the fear of God into every single person in the NHL.
Does really well doing that during interviews after the game.
And I didn't see him step up to any challenge, especially Jack Eyes in the second period. Now, I'm not
Now,
saying
Blaine,
it
the
was the
game was
right time to
close.
fight.
The
Yeah,
game was close, Blaine.
it
You
was. It
know,
was.
we don't want Reeves in the box in case we need him to win.
Yeah. Yeah,
Well,
totally.
I will say this, and I will say this. You don't want to take an instigating penalty. So, but if Jack Eye and him drop the gloves, I don't see anyone getting an instigating penalty out of that. I really don't.
And do you really, Like, as much as I love watching Jack Eye and how well Jack Eye's played recently, if he's out for 5 minutes, I don't think it's going to hurt the Canadians all that much. It'll hurt them much, much more than Reeves being out for 5 minutes. So it's still not a great trade-off.
No, but I had
But
no
maybe it'll shut him up.
Jack Eye kind of went after him in the second period.
Yeah.
Kind of put the game was tied, kind of challenged him. And I'm not going to knock Reeves for not fighting. You're absolutely right. It was a 2-2
Never.
tie. But it's a 2-2 tie against an irrelevant lottery team. So what difference does it make?
Well, they desperately need those points. That's what difference it makes.
So I'll make that argument. Okay, you want the points. You want to make sure you finish in
Sure.
the top three. You're playing Boston or Florida the first round, regardless. It's pretty much defined who you're going to play. It's probably going to
Florida
be
Boston.
Boston. It's probably going to be
It's
Boston.
hilarious.
But really, if they fought, it would not make two sweet differences in that game last night, no matter what time when they fought.
No. And really, the only difference in the game last night, it was two plays. The first one was on the Domi goal. Struble was a little bit off his line, and he lost a step on Domi, and Domi beat him. Domi's fast. The other one is the coach had the fourth line out against Toronto's second line. I think it was near the end of the fourth line shift. Toronto took advantage of that, and JT scored.
The first goal too, when Jack Eye went to check instead of playing the puck, and they just got away on the and I to be honest, I thought maybe Montembeau should have had that one, that shot as well, but it was a well placed shot. But I'm just saying, to me, being a person who goaltended, I was like, oh, I'm a little bit harder on the goalies when it comes to stuff like that. But Jack Eye made the wrong decision. He should have went for the puck. Instead, he tried to go for the body, and it just didn't work. It didn't work at all. But and JT's goal actually was a lucky bounce off a skate. So it's not like
It was, yeah.
he put it in. It was a lucky bounce off a skate. And
And it went to the net.
thanks to Joel Edmondson, who almost put a puck in the net when he went to tip the puck in front of Samsonov. It just so happened that it hit him in the jock and not went behind him. But I was like, good for you, Joel. Good to know you're still a Cav at heart. But overall, I thought it was a good game. I thought Montreal played
Yeah.
well against Toronto. They always seem to play well against Toronto. It's the
Yeah.
rivalry. But I think it says more about Toronto. And is this a team that's going to be able to beat the Bostons and the Floridas? And if they can
I don't
barely
think
beat the
so.
Montreal Canadiens, and I'm saying now, a one-line team, with okay goaltending, the goaltending's average. It's not Carey Price in nets.
No, it's not.
And you win 3-2 on a lucky bounce late in the third period. I'm only saying lucky bounce because it went off a skate. If it would have went off a skate, it probably wouldn't win in the net. But
It wasn't one of those skill plays that got that goal.
get the goal. It's just it went Tavares went to the right place at the right went to where he's supposed to go, and the puck went off a skate. It was a distinct kicking motion if you're a Habs fan, and it wasn't a kicking motion if you're an actual hockey fan because he didn't move his skate at all. But
No,
I
he really didn't.
was going to tweet that distinct kicking motion should be called off, but that's what I let's say. Like Montreal, you're like, oh wow, if Montreal had Doc and Newhook for this whole season, where would they be? They wouldn't be
Who knows?
close to the bottom five. But you look at Toronto, go, all you're missing is Marner. You're playing a almost bottom five team who's like 2-8-2 in their last 10 games, or something like that, right? In the last 10
But
games,
they've
two eight
lost
and two in their last
21,
12.
but they've lost 21 one goal games this year, which is, leading the league. So the number one, yay.
But okay, let's talk about the one goal games. 36 one goal games they've had this year. They've lost 21 of them, and they've won 14. Okay, I don't know how many of those 21 have been overtime, but
Probably at least half.
probably at least half of those. So think about this: if you had Doc and Newhook all year long, how many of those one goal games would you have won?
Exactly. Maybe let's say five.
So
That's
there you
10
go. So
points.
that's 10 more points, and you're at what, 68 points instead of 58 or whatever it is? I don't know how many points they have now.
Yeah, and
58, I think.
you'd be closer to the 12th pick than you are the 7th pick right now.
Yeah. But let's say it's 10. Then you're closer to a playoff spot than you are anywhere else,
Yeah, so
right?
they're about where they should be in this curve. I like the fact that they're going to get the higher pick. It works out better this way. Everyone comes back healthy. They can play better next year. But in this game, they showed that they're really not that far behind because they do have some skill. They actually have a top line, a decent starting goaltender, some good defense, and a work ethic. They're willing to pay the physical price. They're not just a run and gun skill team who relies on refereeing to help them or not. I mean, all we hear is how much the refs hate the Leafs and how purple in the face Sheldon Keefe gets yelling at the referees during the game. And no, that's crap. It's not that. Referees don't like or hate specific teams. Referees hate specific players. It's just the way it works. And in this game, there were some really questionable calls both ways, but the one that really stuck out for me was because it's in a scoring area late in a game in a one goal game. And that's Armia in front of the net, having his stick literally slashed in half in front of the referee who said, "Don't worry about it." How is that not a penalty? I had this discussion online with someone this morning, and they told me that, well, it doesn't say anything about a broken stick in the rule book, but it does. It says a stick or an arm that's slashed with a distinct slashing motion, with effort, power, the whole thing. You don't just break a stick in half, slashing it by just going little tap. There's a slash there. And the fact that he was in a scoring area at a time when the puck was in that zone and that should be a call, but it wasn't. And that lack of consistency, which I've argued about time and again, just pisses me off to no end.
Refereeing has been becoming the worst officiating in all major sports and hockey over the past 3 years. I mean, I don't know, basketball fans would argue that their officiating's terrible, and I've watched a few games,
Should
and
watch a hockey game.
I don't believe there's double dribbling anymore because it just seems like anyone can do what they want out there now. But in
Maybe triple.
hockey, if you've been a hockey fan since the time when we were younger in the 80s, 90s, when you get away with almost murder before a penalty was called.
Yeah.
Now you watch it, and to me, I don't care if the refs don't call anything as long as it's consistent.
Exactly.
If they're not going to call a slash, if they're not going to call hooking, if they're not going to call this, then fine, don't call it. But don't call it. Don't just call it, or if you're going to call it, if you think it's going to take away a scoring chance and you call it, at least if you're consistent with that, right? So then I can say, oh, I know why they called that. They didn't call it earlier because that center ice didn't really affect the play. They're calling it here because it kind of did affect a chance at a score at a goal,
And you may not
right?
agree with it, but it would make sense. You'd understand
It would make
why.
sense. You'd understand why. But now it just seems like they, oh, I haven't called a penalty in about 5 minutes. No one's seen me put my arm up yet today. Oh, yeah, that looks like a hook to me.
Yeah.
You had your blade up by his hands. I seen that, and it's like a nothing play. Like he's just, to
Away from the
me, a
puck,
lot.
away from the game.
Again, maybe it's because I'm old school. A lot of the hooking I look at and go, that was a hook. You're calling that like that? That's a
Yeah.
hook, right? And but you're absolutely right. If he's coming down with enough force to break his stick, that's a slash. It's a slash. Again, going back old school, if you hit the stick, it's not a slash. Because guess what? The stick didn't count as part of the body. So you can hack
Must
and
have.
slash at that stick all day long. And Marty St. Louis said, and I will quote from Reading Lips, how the fuck do you think he broke his stick? So you're fucking awful. Fuck off with that shit. is exactly what he said.
What is his fine for that?
He didn't
Because
get
how
kicked
dare
out.
he?
He didn't get kicked out like Torts did,
No.
but you need a guy like Torts to start doing stuff like that because these referees aren't held accountable. And if they are, nobody sees it. A coach can't talk about how poor officiating was. Players can't talk about their issues they have with officiating. The league doesn't say anything about whether officiate, blah, blah, blah. At least in football, if you're not that good, you don't do the playoffs. Your team does not make any, because NFL works as teams. Well, your team's not making the doing the playoffs because you guys were piss poor. I don't know what they do in hockey, but all I know is, Torts didn't like, I don't know what he said. I saw the afterwards where he wouldn't leave the bench, and I thought it was a fucking amazing. I love John Tortorella. If he can ever coach Montreal, please let him come to. I don't care if he doesn't speak French.
Well, it does help that St. Louis played for him, so maybe St. Louis got a little bit of Torts in there.
I hope it comes out. I hope it comes out someday. And I don't find St. Louis that adamant behind the net. He has his
No.
moments, but he's not. But Torts, whatever happened, they told him to get out. He told him he wasn't leaving, to fuck off, play the game. You're fucking terrible. And he stayed there. Then they said to go again. He goes, I'm not leaving. And it was just, you just wanted to say, I love you. I love John Tortorella. You are the
And the
greatest coach ever.
Flyers ownership said they will pay any fine whatsoever. They don't care.
Good for
Because
them.
that's Philly
Yeah.
hockey
Yeah.
to a T.
I didn't see that. I don't know the aftermath of that. I haven't heard. I know Elliot Friedman said it was kind of, they thought it was very funny what he was doing, but I'm sure the NHL won't find it as funny. Now, I haven't heard anything yet, but this is where it's
Because
come
how
to, though,
dare he?
NHL. NHL, you made this problem yourselves. This is where it's come to because you can't challenge the refereeing. You can't sit there and say, this referee, Gary Bettman comes on the air and says, we have some of the best officiating in the world. No, you don't. Junior A has better officiating than you guys do. It's fucking
Well,
terrible.
let's put it this way. If you're looking to the IIHF and saying those rules work way better in a North American game, like for instance, I don't know, goaltender interference. Can anyone fucking tell me what goaltender interference is? No, no one can. Nobody knows what the hell's going on. But you look at the IIHF, their rules are in black and white. It's goaltender interference if they do A, B, or C. You get a penalty, or you get sent outside the zone, or based on this list of criteria. In the NHL, it's hold on. I'm going to put it in the secret book, and I'm going to flip this coin a few times. Oh, no, that's not a goal. But the exact same play happens 5 minutes later. It counts. Explain it to me.
Carey Price dragged out of his net with a guy by a guy's skate, not goalie interference. Brendan Gallagher got his bum in a goalie's face, barely touching him, goalie interference.
He gave him a
Mind you,
hand cut.
it's Brendan Gallagher, so I can see why they called it on him because referees hate Brendan Gallagher, and I get it. I get it. But in any team, you can do that for you can go to any team in the NHL, and they have some play that was called goalie interference, and you're going, what? How is that goalie interference? Like, okay, yeah, he bumped into the goalie, but the goalie still had time to get up, place himself, look to see where the puck was, and then try to make the save. But you're still.
Which brings me back to the slashing call. It was a scoring chance, well, at least in a scoring position, in a key moment of the game, right in the freaking referee's line of sight. And he turned to Armia. He looked at Armia and said, "Nope, nope, not a slash." As Armia is holding two broken pieces in his fucking hands, but that same referee in the next game is going to call that every time.
I still say a lot of referees put their whistles away in the final minutes of a game, and it takes almost an act of God. And that's why I always get shocked when I hear of a penalty in overtime because I'm like, wait a minute. You never called shit for the last 5 minutes of the regular. Why are you calling that
What?
now in overtime? You know
Exactly.
what I mean? Like,
It's
and
bullshit.
that's what, and some of them are really soft. Like a lot of the hooking penalties I see, or this guy was just bigger than the other guy when he knocked him down penalties. That got to stop. That has to stop. Like, if a guy just has his stick up like this, it's not a hook. It's a hook if he hooks him back. If he's just kind of, nudging at his
Tapping him,
hands,
just tapping him with a stick or whatever.
to me, that's not a hook. All
Yeah.
he's trying to do is, okay, I'm not going to catch you, but maybe I can take you off your shot just by kind of tapping in the stick. He's not hooking him off the play. The guy still got control of the stick. I don't know. I remember back in the days, Lemieux used to carry guys on his back down the ice, defenders all over him. The referee would be like, "All right, let's see what happens here." Hacking and
Back in
slashing,
my
and
day.
Dino
All right, so I
Ciccarelli
think
with
we've
the
gone down.
two-hander.
Yeah, I think we've gone down a rabbit hole. We're going to come to the end of the show here. We've definitely covered everything that we were going to talk about today. So what do you have for final thoughts?
Oh, interesting fun fact. In 1977, three astronomers found the rings around Uranus.
Well, I showered that year.
It's right here in my on this day. I can even tell you who the astronomers were: James J. Elliott, Edward W. Dunham, and Jessica Mink. They found the rings
One-eyed
around
Joe.
Uranus. They found the rings around Uranus, baby. 1977.
Mean, what can you say to
The more you know.
that? All right, so
20 games
really.
left. Enjoy it. You know what?
Yeah.
Montreal, I still think Montreal's picking around seventh or sixth. They do have a chance to drop to fifth. They do. They're within 4 points. I wouldn't mind a top five pick because it means you're getting either Lindstrom, Demidov, or one of the good guys. But enjoy it.
Yeah.
Enjoy it.
Yeah. There's several really good players available in that zone, that area that they're gonna be picking at. So I think they'll do well in this draft. I'm looking forward to seeing when Layton Hudson and David Reinbacher make an appearance, maybe even Luke Tuck.
We got to get signed first, but
Exactly. He's well, just like Layton Hudson.
Reinbacher, I believe, is playing a regulation tournament, I think, or a regulation
Yeah, relegation tournament right now, but
relegation
it's not going to
tournament.
last much longer.
And Layne Hudson could go as far as the Frozen Four, so
Well, yeah, so would Tuck.
the
They could join Laval.
worst case scenario is Layne Hudson can play two games in the major league.
Which I still think is probably what's going to happen. So I'm
Yeah,
looking
same here.
forward to that. Getting to see some of the new young guys coming up. See how Joshua Wab does the rest of the way. Stuff like that. That's the stuff I'm looking for. Not necessarily, run the table, but hey, let's have some fun with it. So that does it for today's show. I want to thank everybody for tuning in, listening. You can find us anywhere you can find podcasts. For everyone that's interacting with us on social media, the ones that do it respectfully, I love it. The more of you, the better. I had a good talk, especially about the slashing issue. I had a good talk with someone today. It was productive. It was intelligently placed together. The arguments back and forth were not mean. So that's what we love to see. That's what we love having with you guys. So again, thank you. Thank you very much for tuning in, listening, and interacting. And remember, if you're talking about it, so are we.
I'm Jeff Woods, and I'm shining a light on music and the rock stars who make it.
He just was one of those people. He stood out.
He was a magic guy. He really was a magic guy. We all have force. He had the same amount of force as we all have.
This was before Led Zeppelin. Robert was full on. I mean, he was Led Zeppelin without the band behind him. He had the hair, the jeans, the whole thing, And he was amazing.
The Records and Rockstars podcast, heard around the world and yours to hear wherever you get podcasts. All the episodes from JeffWoodsRadio.com.
Do, Did, Will, the Story of People podcast is now available on the Crier Media Network. The first five episodes are here and feature some incredible guests that fit into one or all three of those categories. Ready? Tara Sloan from the San Jose Sharks, Undercurrent podcast at NBC Sports. Marianne Iveson from Iveson Voice and the Let's Take This Outside podcast to talk about the world of outdoors as well as voiceover land. Ariana Hunsicker, future Canadian Paralympic swimmer, already winning tons of awards for this country. Scott McGregor from the Hot Wallet podcast to dumb down the world of crypto, Bitcoin, and NFTs so you don't have to. And Jackie Holowaty from Climate Pledge Arena in Seattle, Washington, the first net zero carbon certified arena on the planet. Wherever you get your pods, wherever you watch your pods, and on the Crier Media Network.